Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks for tuning in. We're here to answer your questions. We have a couple of guests that have been here before, and I'm going to start off by letting them introduce themselves and give their resumes. Jeff, you want to start?
Sure. Morning, Scott. Glad to be here. My name's Jeff Kendall. I'm a... landscape designer, project manager, sales kind of guy with Horstman Brothers. I've been in the green industry for 40 plus years. 23 years at Horstman Brothers, and happy to be there and good place to work. And anyway, we're full service landscape contractors. We do everything, both commercial and residential. We do from everything from, you know, grass cutting and turf fertilization, weed control, seeding, tree shrub care, complete landscape, you know, design and installation, irrigation, lighting. Trying to think, that's pretty much it. But snow removal for commercial. And so we're in it all the time. So anyway, we're excited. Spring is coming. Big mini ice age here is leaving us, and time to think spring.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Glenn Kramer, and I'm the owner operator along with my son Ben of a local seed company called GR Robinson Seed and Service Company. And actually, tomorrow is our 25th anniversary.
No way.
Yeah, 25
years. Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, miracles happen every day, trust me.
And well, to be in business for 25 years in any industry.
Yeah, it's just us and two other guys, too.
That's incredible.
We are the epitome of a small family-run business.
Well, that's great.
And the freedom that gives us is incredibly enjoyable. But we sell George's Magic Mix to retail locations, and otherwise we're a wholesale distributor of grass seed, fertilizer, and chemicals. And we also sell ice melt and had one heck of a couple of weeks there.
I bet.
Yeah, it was interesting.
George's Magic Mix.
Yeah,
I know you've mentioned this before, but yeah, for those who haven't heard, what is that exactly?
Yeah, so we source different seeds from different seed companies, and that we're unique in that we have the ability, because we're small, to buy from two or three different actual producers of seed, and we try to do as much research as we can and try to get the highest quality weed-free seeds put all in one bag, and that differentiates us from some of the bigger box store folks who have to buy from only one company and have to buy only what they produce that year. So, I will tell people that buying the best seed is only about 1/10 of the equation to a successful lawn. You still have to mow it properly and fertilize it properly, but starting with a good seed's a good foundation.
I would think so. It is February 1st, and that means we are really starting to think about spring coming soon, and especially with temperatures close to 70 degrees on Monday. So we'll get into some topics about that. And, of course, we are here to answer your questions. This is an at-your-service program that has been on the air for more than 30 years, and the only way it has stayed on the air is that you call in and ask your questions. So the number to call is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. There also is an 800 number. You have to dial the 1. That is 1-800-925-1120. So we'll get to your questions as soon as the phone banks light up. We were talking off air, unbelievably to me, because this topic just came up in front of me, and it was... Last year, a lot of the shows are organic in terms of the topic. I don't know what's going to stick, you know. And last year we had the cicadas, and then we had zoysia grass, and then we had so and so, and one of them was moles and voles. At least three episodes last year. And Glenn here is like, I listened to last week's show, and there was something about moles, and you wanted to address this.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody called in and talked about how when the snow melted off, he had noticed that his front yard or his side yard was eaten up by mole activity. And, you know, moles don't stop. They are meat consumers, and so they are eating earthworms. And there's a belief that sometimes chemicals or insecticides to control grubs helps deter moles, and there's nothing further from the truth. It was addressed that, you know, trapping moles or using baits is the best thing to use. And I believe that person backed up to a common ground. And when you have a large common ground, the fissures in the soil that young moles use, the mom and dad in the common ground, when they produce babies, they will find those fissures all the time. And so you're not a bad person if you have moles. You're just unlucky, you know. And so you just have to stay on top of them. And using an extermination service, if you're not willing to do it yourself, is really the advice that was given last week. And I resonate with that advice.
You know, Glenn, one observation too, also doing what we do and tied into what you're talking about moles, you know, also I've always noticed that you know, a lot of times somebody have moles, and we'll talk to them about how to, as you said, trap or bait them and so forth. But one common thread I always see as well is, you know, if you're actually taking care of your turf, which means watering it in the summertime, you are way more vulnerable to mole activity, because I'll hear that in a year several times. You know, I look at my yard, I've got moles all over, my neighbor doesn't have them. And I'm like, yeah, and he doesn't have much grass either, and his yard's bone dry, and the mole can't dig.
Well, the healthier the soil, the more likely you are to have moles, because it's having earthworms is a blessing, not a curse. But the moles know that as well, that the buffet is set, per se, and they will frequent the healthier lawns more frequently.
But I totally agree with you, Glenn. You've almost got to just physically kill them, you know, to take care of
if
them.
If they bother you. And
yeah.
I've been in classes at the botanical garden where people are like, why do you want to kill the moles? And I don't want to, but some people do.
Are these people, they don't have moles? The people
probably
that say,
not,
why do you want to
not.
Kill the moles? They have never had them. I have
probably
had them,
not, yes.
And they are a plague on society.
Yeah, they're an ankle breaker if you're not careful. Yeah.
They're all God's creatures. However,
exactly.
There are certain ones who deserve to die. Okay.
Yep. Now, what's your philosophy, Scott, on groundhogs? Tomorrow's Groundhog Day.
Groundhogs are too cute.
Yeah, they are.
And tomorrow is Groundhog Day.
Unless you're that that, remember that mayor that got bit by the, he was holding it up?
Yeah.
I think you can get that video, you know, it's like it bites him in the face.
Yeah. Well, what, do you guys know anything about groundhogs since you brought it up?
I have them behind my property, and they dig, and they are kind of curious little creatures. And there's a, ironically, there's a good article about groundhogs in the Missouri Conservationist this month. And yeah, they seem to be harmless. They did talk about the part of the article says they only live a couple of years, but they have 2 to 9 offspring. So you'll never get rid of groundhogs like you'll never get rid of moles if you have them.
Yeah. But they're like an angelic cousin to the mole.
They're
the devil.
Yeah.
they are. They're kind of cool animal, though. I like seeing them. They're not in my yard, so that's okay. You know?
Right. Well, we are going to get into some questions about what we should be doing here in February since we just hit the month. It is true that the Christmas tree is still up at the radio station here, but we are moving on towards spring, and it's February. So we're going to get into those questions, and hopefully you have some to provide for Glenn and for Jeff this morning. It is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Glad to be joined by Jeff Kendall and Glenn Kramer to answer your questions at 314-436-7900. Since you brought it up, guys.
Atmosphere is a wonderful thing. And we can create our own and the weather it brings. It brings hope for the future and so much more. Maybe some Punxsutawney Phil write-in votes in 2024. But what this weather did not provide is a shadow or reason to hide. Glad tidings on this Groundhog Day. An early spring is on the way.
Hey, that was from last year, obviously. Tomorrow is Groundhog Day, so Punxsutawney Phil will come back out or stay back in, whatever he decides to do. It's always a fun event, and last year, spring was coming early. I have a feeling that's going to happen more often just because of climate change, but who knows?
I think it's about the shadow, you know, so I guess we get clouds when it's warm as well, so I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I think... We subscribe to a weather service that tells us that winter is going to return on the 15th or 16th of February. But I encourage anybody to take advantage of the days and the warm weather. And there's an organization out there called the Forest Keepers. It's a local group. They're involved with forest relief here in St. Louis. And I got a postcard in the mail yesterday, and it talked about the witch hazel plant. And, you know, that's one of the first to bloom plants. And, you know, if anybody has one of those in their yard and they're interested, there's a forestkeepers.org website, and they ask people to write in a card and fill out their observations of their witch hazel. And that, to me, is kind of a sign that spring is really on its way. And we're going to get hit by winter again, but hopefully it won't be like we had the first couple weeks in January.
Today is the first day of the orchid show at the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Yeah.
So that's another sign.
Yeah, that was on the news the other night, too. And I was telling Jeff earlier that my wife and I went to the Climatron a couple of weeks ago. And if you haven't been to the Climatron on a cold day, there's nothing like being in a 70-degree building with a waterfall making noise in the background. And it's a great opportunity to know that spring is on its way.
That place is wonderful, the Climatron.
Yeah.
I like going in there, too.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
Going into the jungle.
Yeah. Yep.
And the plant species from all over the world. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to our first phone call for Jeff and Glenn. We have Mary. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I did not cut my rose bushes at the time I should have in the fall. I wonder when can I cut them back now?
Mary, you can... right now is perfectly fine, or even a few weeks from now, just before they really start to send up new growth and new shoots. So you're not late by any means. Just you can go ahead and do that.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Okay, thank you for your call, Mary. 314-436-7900. Guys, it's talking about February. What are the things people should be thinking about for this particular month?
I know on the lawn care side, a lot of people are starting to make plans for making their first application, and I just encourage people to wait till the ground isn't so waterlogged. You in a perfect world, you don't want any company riding or walking on saturated soil. When you squeeze the air out of the soil, you're really causing compaction, and you'll see dead grass spots in your lawn from like mailmen walking on it or Amazon guy. I noticed the other night in my neighborhood, I call it the Amazon footprints through the front yard, but your grass will grow back. So.
Yeah, the other thing, turf-wise, Glenn, you know, we've talked, you and I, on this show before, but about seeding in the spring. And, you know, like you said, if you got bare spots and, you know, you need to go ahead and seed because they're not going to grow grass miraculously, you know, by a miracle over the summer. You got to put some seed on them. But if you're going to do that in St. Louis, you need to do it early, you know. So I would think, you know, starting now or even a couple weeks from now would be perfect time to start if you got to do a little spring seeding to do it.
At my property, I noticed the snowplow guy got a little aggressive and scratched up the grass. And I'll need to go out and rake that smooth and probably add some soil and seed those areas. But I'll wait till the last week of February. I'll be safe.
Yeah. I've got the similar damage. So that's, yeah.
Well, Glenn works for a company that is a seed company, so he would know, and he's been doing it for 25 years as of
tomorrow,
yeah. February 2nd. Yeah. Great. That is G.R. Robinson, by the way, the name of the company, and Jeff Kendall is with Horstman Brothers. And your phone calls at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Bob. Good morning, Bob.
You there?
Yep. You're on the air.
Hey, I got a question for you. I have some crepe myrtles in the front, and I guess they're about 8 or 10 foot high now. And I wanted to cut them down about halfway. Can I do that?
Absolutely, Bob. You can do that. In fact, you know, if you cut them now halfway, they'll be totally fine. If you even want to go a little deeper down, you can. You can also kind of wait and with the crepe myrtle, you got to wait a while, you know, to see where they actually leaf out, you know, because I wouldn't be surprised if this year they're in. You know, like the last few years, I bet there's a little bit of winter dieback on those. You know, I don't expect them to really fully leaf out at the tips, you know. But halfway back is not going to hurt them at all right now.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob. 314-436-7900. So what kind of calls are you getting, Jeff, in terms of landscaping ideas or questions right now?
Yeah, so we're in a busy, actually, you know, it's not like peak spring or anything with production wise, but we are in a busy time of year for Horstman Brothers, you know, and what I do, I'm blessed, lucky to have like almost 280 clients, maintenance clients. So I got to get those contracts all out and get everybody on board and, you know, services entered and ready to roll for spring. And that's pretty time consuming. But to your point, we are getting phone calls. And just this week, I had a new client lead, you know, that called in for some design and, you know, start working on that. And I've got several design things I need to do. So it's that time to get moving on that.
In terms of your clients, are you primarily business clients or residential?
You know, as a company, we're diverse and mixed. I think, you know, we would tend to say we're probably more residential than commercial in terms of total dollars sold, that kind of thing. So I'd say we're probably about 60% residential, 40% commercial.
60%, 40%.
Yeah. So.
In terms of seeds, you said you have your magic seed. Mm-hmm. What other seeds do you have in your portfolio?
Well, that kind of transcends into a lot of stuff for sports fields and golf courses. My son is very involved in the golf course side of the business. And we're getting a lot of calls right now about snow and ice damage and salt damage to yards. And so we're moving and getting calls whether we have gypsum or not. And gypsum at fit, they call, somebody called last week about this as well, but the rate on gypsum should be about 50 pounds of gypsum per 1,000 square feet, and you'll mitigate salt damage, whether it's on lawns or shrubs. I'm working with somebody in Olivet, and they're worried about their perennials getting salt damage, and you know, we're instructing them to put 50 pounds of gypsum per 1,000 square feet, and you'll counteract the salt that gets built up in the soil from just trying to make the sidewalk safe. So that happens quite a bit.
Let's go back to the phones. Up next, we have Christy. Christy, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
Okay, well, I have two different questions or two different areas that I have questions in. But the first one is I brought in my palm trees from the patio, and they're like birds of paradise, you know, the big, tall, stocky. And my question is, the leaves that have curled and died, if I cut those stalks, will they reproduce leaves again, or I just have to wait for a new shoot?
I believe, Christy, you're just going to, you know, it'd be best from a horticultural standpoint to go ahead and remove any dead or, you know, dead foliage, you know, because that could harbor, you know, maybe some fungus or bug, give, you know, insects an opportunity to get going. You'll have to wait for it to send out new growth, you know, from the stem or trunks.
Okay, so those stems will pretty much cut them back as far as I can, basically, to make the, you know, make it look nice, I guess.
Yeah, and it should send out new buds and then new shoots, you know, so it should be all right.
Okay.
I mean, it didn't get overly cold, did it, or how cold did it?
No, it's probably just, I'm not the best waterer, so it's probably kind of mad, and I mean, it's the soil's dry, and I need to.
Yeah, well, it's actually probably good that you're not an overwaterer, you know, with indoor foliage in the wintertime, that can be quite a problem, actually, so that's good. It'll probably wake up here when it's supposed to.
Okay, yeah, I mean, they're huge, and they take up the one bedroom, so I just can't wait to get them back outside. My other question is, I have about a five-year-old mimosa tree in the backyard, and there's two branches that need to come off. They're probably 3 inches in diameter. When's a good time to take those off? And should I put some sort of salve or something in that spot where I took that branch off at the trunk?
Okay. So as far as I know, with a mimosa, you could go ahead and do that like now. You know, actually dormant pruning is good for most shrubs and trees like that, and you know, no, you really don't want to put tar or anything like that on the wound. You
just
want,
makes you feel good. Yeah, it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, no, just a nice clean cut, you know, is what you want, real very close to the trunk, you know, and it should be okay.
And I can't get it to bloom. Is that just a tiny thing, or is there something I can add to the soil? It bloomed the second year I had it, which was a really small tree. And, I mean, they grow fast, naturally, but I cannot get it to bloom. And they have the prettiest pink blooms. And some people say it's just a time thing, you know, or it's the soil. So I didn't know if there's something I can do to, you know, get it going.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'm not an expert on the mimosa, but it may be a scenario. I think this is right. It probably blooms on older wood, you know, so it could be that it, you know, if it died back, you know, it needs a two-season cycle, you know, to get back to where it's blooming.
And she could always do a soil test and see if there's a lack of phosphorus in the soil available.
Yeah.
That might contribute to the lack of flowers.
Could be.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Christy. We appreciate it. It's 314-436-7900. It is February 1st. I know you have questions. I know you have questions about your garden and your lawn because spring is coming and tomorrow is Groundhog Day and we don't know what Phil is going to say, but either way, you have to be prepared. So we'll continue with your phone calls after a short break. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis. I'm Scott Jagow, here with Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers and Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson Seating, that here to answer your phone calls at 314-436-7900. It is February 1st. Tomorrow is Groundhog Day.
All right, on me in 3, 2, 1. Well, it's Groundhog Day again, and that must mean that we're up here at Gobbler's Knob waiting for the forecast from the world's most famous groundhog weatherman, Punxsutawney Phil, who's just about to tell us how much more winter we can expect.
Ryan. Oh, isn't he cute?
This February 2nd at 7:20 and 30 seconds, Punxsutawney Phil, the seer of seers, prognosticator of prognosticators.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow what he says. Last year, we got some more spring. We'll see what happens this year. The number to call is 314-436-7900. Bunny, good morning. You're up next.
Okay, I have a question. I have some boxwood out in the front of my house, and it looks like it was sunburned. It's got little white tips all over the top. Can I prune that off, or what should I do?
It could be a couple things, but what you're describing, I believe, is just some winter damage, you know, which has occurred. And actually, that can be very common. Did you prune the plants maybe last fall at all? Because if you prune them in the fall, and usually with boxwoods, you know, fall is early fall anyway, is a good time to prune those. But sometimes they'll shoot out new growth after you trim them, and then that new growth isn't quite as hardy, and it's more subject to winter damage. So anyway, but yes, to answer your question, you can go ahead and trim that off.
Should I do it now, or do I have to wait?
Right now, it wouldn't hurt it. They're probably going to stay dormant, you know, for a little bit, you know, I mean, and it should be fine, especially if you're just removing, like a light outer edge, you know, the dead material.
You might consider making an application of something called wilt proof or an anti-desiccant, which won't change what's happened but might prevent more of that discoloring.
It'd be a great idea, Glenn, for next year. I mean, that would be the key thing, is if you can use that wilt proof in the fall, you know, to protect them.
Okay, in the fall. The fall's the time to really do everything, right?
Well, I mean, you know, the boxwoods, actually, you know, pruning them early spring is okay, because they'll shoot out new growth, which you want, and heading into spring, you know. Really, the best times to prune the boxwoods normally is like May. Think about May or even early June, and then again maybe like Labor Day time or early September. And if you got to radically prune them, actually, like March is preferred, because if you're going to get down to bare wood, that really about the only time they will grow back at all is if you do it in like early March.
Great. Thank you. That's what I'll do. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Bunny. The number to reach our guests who are answering your questions this morning, 314-436-7900. It is Jeff and Glenn. What else should we be thinking about here in February?
Lots, you know, and what traditionally, I think, you know, in terms of landscaping in St. Louis, once we get to, Valentine's Day, it's like time to roll full bore. But even now, and again, with the way the weather's been the last few years, you know, it's a great time to get out, finish cleaning things up. These warm days coming up, get things cleaned up. Great time to get a pre-emergent down in your beds, you know, because you may be able to fend off some of the winter weeds. Although we were doing a cleanup this week, and we actually had, there was a lot of henbit and chickweed already going. So, but definitely a good time to get your pre-emergent down, and then, you know, go ahead and mulch if you want. You know, you may, it, you know, there's no harm in doing it now. Obviously, if you mulch now, it may not look as great as it, you know, it may lose its color, you know, earlier in the summer than it normally does. But that definitely will help give you some weed protection, you know, for the spring season.
And once the soil dries out, soil preparation, whether you need to change the pH or add an amendment, it's a great time to do that prior to planting and, you know, letting the snow or more rain, you know, compress that soil. Because once you amend it or fluff it up, it needs to be compressed or pushed down to really get the final grade.
But it doesn't really matter if we're going to get another big snowstorm or we're going to get sub-zero temperatures after having 70 degrees.
No,
it's okay. All that's fine.
No, it'll be okay. It's actually those 70 degree temperatures, in my opinion, is a great opportunity to get some work done.
Yeah.
No one comes into my office and talks about how much labor they have. They all talk about how they got to get stuff done.
Right. So, yeah. The number to reach us is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Anything looking ahead to later this year, anything that you see maybe as a trend in the gardening world that you've noticed?
You know, one thing that came up this week or early this week, we found out that some of our wholesale flower vendors are actually already, you know, way booked up. So I would think it's, you know, the earlier you kind of get committed that you're going to need something, the better you're off. You know, it's hard to say supply wise, but I think with like annual flowers, it may be a little tight this year.
I know on my side, it seems like when we teach classes at the Botanical Garden or for the Extension Service, the do-it-yourselfer folks seem to be on the rise. I think there's a lot of frustration with the bigger lawn care companies, and people want to try to do it themselves, and we're more than glad to help you with that.
And you think that frustration is just they have so much business, it's hard to get on their calendar, like that?
Yeah, I think there's a labor shortage, and there aren't 19 and 20-year-olds waking up and saying, well, I'd like to be a lawn care operator, or I'd like to go out and spread fertilizer for the next 10 years.
Right.
It's just diminishing numbers of youths that want to do that type of work.
That's a good observation.
Yeah.
Jeff, you are up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. I just have a really quick question. I've got some azalea bushes around the house. When's the best time to just do some light trimming and shaving on those so I make sure that they flower, you know, in spring? I don't want to kill them.
Hey, Jeff, you know, the best time to prune those is after they bloom, you know, so they should bloom in April or late April or early May. And then, you know, if you can prune them after they're done blooming, that's great because they'll set bloom buds for next year. As far as just generally shaping or removing an oddball branch or something like that, you can do that like any time, you know, but the risk would be cutting off the blooms, which is, you know, why a lot of time, or, you know, what you may have the plant for is to enjoy the bloom. So if you can do it after it blooms, best, safest time to do it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. We have Jeff Kendall and Glenn Kramer answering your questions. And all of a sudden, the phones have lit up. So we're going to take a quick break and get to those phone calls as soon as we can. It's 314-436-7900, the Garden Hotline on Camel.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got a few phone calls here, so let's get straight to them for Jeff and Glenn. Kristen, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
I heard last fall about the George's Miracle Mix on this program, and I tried it for an area that I had had terrible troubles with, and it worked wonderfully. We have Creeping Charlie, and we had tried just smothering it with a vinyl tarp. That didn't work. What did work was actually digging it out and then applying that grass seed. The area has really done well. I want to do another spot. Is that a spring job or a fall job? And shout out to Schnars Hardware for stocking the product. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Frank does a great job, and his daughters are wonderful people to deal with. So thank you. Christy, yeah, the spring is actually a pretty good time to do that. You have to be careful with Creeping Charlie because they have rhizomes or underground roots. So wherever you think the weed is, add another 6 or 8 inches because there might be a root off to the side that you just don't see. But, yeah, doing that after March 1st, March 15th is probably a good time. And there is a chemical called triclopyr that would be very good for if you wanted to go the selective herbicide route on that, that is effective with Creeping Charlie, but you have to read the label and the devil's in the details. You have to apply it and you wait 2 weeks and you reapply it, you know, every 2 to 3 weeks because there's no chemical that gets rid of Creeping Charlie or Creeping Violets with one application. It's a labor of love. It usually takes a whole year.
Yeah, I don't use any pesticides. Okay. We're like an organic yard. That's why we have so many moles.
Well, mow it as tall as you can because nothing helps choke out weeds like a good thick lawn, and you don't get there by mowing it short. So I think that's okay. The number one problem people make on their cool season lawns in St. Louis. They think scalping it's a good idea, and it's not bad to mow it short in the spring or in the fall, but never after April 1st.
Mm. Thanks for the advice. I appreciate your help.
Good luck, Christy.
Yeah, thank you. Good question. We'll go now to Joyce. Joyce, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, guys. Good morning. I have a flowering crab apple. It's very mature, and every year it gets a fungus. And I spray it religiously once a month, and I know that that's what it is because I had taken a sample of the leaves up to my garden center, and they determined that that's what it was, and they also determined what product I should be using to spray. My concern or question is, I do that religiously, and it's still in between those sprays has the dropping of leaves. So, I mean, should I spray it more frequently, or what would you suggest that I... It's a healthy tree. It just continuously keeps that fungus by dropping the leaves.
Joyce, I'll tell you, maybe Glenn and I both step in on this, and he can maybe talk more of the details of the right fungicide to use. But I know timing is everything. You need to make sure that we get that sprayed, you know, like right before it blooms and right after it blooms, and then another dose right after that. I mean, most of the damage is going to be set in and done during the mid-spring type season.
Right.
Now, when they drop leaves all summer long, though, let me ask, is it actually the same scabby, brown and black, and, you know, dots and specks and stuff on the leaves, or is it just kind of yellow and falling off, or what's it doing?
Yellow. More yellow.
Mm-hmm. More yellow. So that's probably just that crab abscissing just dropping some leaves as the summer kicks in, and, that it comes out real heavy in the spring, and then, you know, we get into a drier stretch, they'll thin out and drop some leaves, you know. But the fungus itself is usually, best treated early in the spring. And if it's raining when they're blooming, it's going to be a tough deal, I can tell you. Glenn, what is the best product right now?
Most of the tree guys that I deal with, use a chemical or a product called Banner or propiconazole. And they'll apply that, when the leaves are about a quarter of an inch to a half inch just emerging from the branches. And they might make a second application throughout the summer. The good thing about what you're describing is it won't kill the tree. It'll just make it not look great. You could also, if you have irrigation in your yard, try not to get any water on the leaves, anytime after 8 a.m., because water on the leaves will add to that black spot of, it's the same thing with like roses. You don't ever water the leaves of roses. You want to water from the ground down, not from the top up, top down. So
exactly.
The early application, maybe a second application of a
just
fungicide.
A note too, back to our garden center, any of our fellow gardeners out there, if you've got a question or you're not sure what it is, that garden center, all of them, I'm assuming, has mine. I go to Joe's Market Basket here in O'Fallon, Illinois. But they have an amazing computer system that they can put that leaf or whatever you bring in under that and tell you immediately what it is and solve the mystery. So just a heads up.
Yeah, last week the guest was talking about the apps where you can take a picture of a weed and it'll actually tell you what the weed is, and it's technology is wonderful if you know how to use it. My gray hair doesn't let me know how to use it all the time.
Oh, it's amazing. But anyway, thank you very much for the information. I feel better that I'm doing the right thing, and I've had several talks with the tree, but it's obviously not listening, so we'll have a couple more. Thank you very much for that information. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thank you, Joyce, for calling in. The number to call is 314-436-7900. We do have a couple of people already waiting to ask their questions, but we have to take a break for the news. So you can either stay on the line or call back in at the just after the top of the hour. Either way, let's continue the conversation on the Garden Hotline on St. Louis's Voice, KMOX. And today, our guests are Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers Landscaping and Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson. They specialize in seeds. He's been in business as of tomorrow for 25 years, so congratulations.
Yay. Thank you very much.
Very good. Well done. That is no small achievement. And Horstman Brothers has been around, what, 4 decades now?
Yeah, since the low 80s.
All right. Well, we've got the phones lighting up here, 314-436-7900. We'll go next to Bob, who's been waiting patiently. Bob, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Is this a good time to put down gypsum to try to break up clay soil?
Bob, sure. It's a good time to put down gypsum, but when you hear the words break up clay soil, don't be too optimistic that's going to happen anytime soon. If gypsum would break up clay soil, we couldn't keep enough gypsum on the shelf. So people hear that and you read about it and it's talked about, but it is not acute. It is not quick. And so you would want to, in theory, break up soil or clay soils with an application in the spring and then, so March or February, and then again in September or October, but it's not a panacea. You're not going to put that down and somebody's going to walk by your yard in 6 months and say, oh, you're the guy to put down gypsum and broke up your clay soil. It's not how it happens. It's very slow. So be prepared to do it for 2 or 3 years in a row and expect the results to come very slowly.
Okay. Well, disappointed, but thanks.
Yeah. good core aeration in conjunction with gypsum and using organic fertilizers and organic top dressing materials will help break up the clay much more than just a single or two applications of gypsum.
Okay, well, thanks for the tips. Sure.
Good luck. Thanks for calling in, Bob. It is 314-436-7900. Up next, let's go to Judy. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I need to learn about pre-emergence. One, what is it? Two, why would I use it? Where would I use it? And when would I use it?
Well, we only have 55 minutes left. I'll do my best. So pre-emergence in the lawn, we'll start with lawns.
Okay, I could care less about the lawn. Okay, let's go to planting, shrubs, sure. Trees, flower beds, okay. Etc. I can live without grass.
Yeah, generally, if you have a good thick mulch and you stir that and you're willing to pull a few weeds, your need for pre-emergence in beds on a homeowner would be minimal. But you would want to apply that, in my opinion, somewhere around the end of February, early March, right after you do your spring mulching. I'm a guy that likes to stir the old mulch, apply new mulch, and then apply the pre-emergent on top of that and then water it in. You know, anytime you buy anything in a bag that's granule, it does nothing until it gets watered in. So springtime in February or March, and then again at the end of October to mid-November, we'll stop what we talked about in an earlier hour, these winter annuals, mainly chickweed and henbit, which I went around my property yesterday and I saw a ton of chickweed and henbit at the ground level. So it's too late to stop what's there, but an application in late October to early November would have stopped all of the small green weeds that you might be seeing today in your bed. So that's why you would do it. Like I say, most homeowners, in my house, I just pull the few weeds that I grow in my yard and don't use any pre-emergent in there at all.
Well, I do the same thing. To be sure, I understand. So stir the old existing mulch, mm-hmm. apply the new mulch, water that in, and then do the pre-emergent?
No, you would put the pre-emergent in and water last.
Oh, water is last.
And
okay.
It doesn't take much. When I say water, I water for 2 minutes. That's all it takes to dissolve those pellets. And
okay. And pre-emergent, would preen be considered a pre-emergent?
That's one of them, sure. Yeah, that's a real common one that you can get at most hardware stores. People like Schnars will sell you preen. Just read the label and understand the amount of pounds per 1,000 square feet is very important.
And it's very complicated to figure out.
No, it's just length times width. That's all it is. Just simple math of length times width will give you your square footage.
And then also just remember that the pre-emergence only work on annual weeds, you know. So if you got, there are perennial weeds and you could have something in those garden beds that actually you just need to physically remove, you know, to get rid of it or spot treat it with a post-emergent spray.
Yeah. That's what I've done in the past. But I really thank you for the information. It's very helpful, and I will proceed from here.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Judy. Those were good questions. I love when people call in about things that we mention every single show, usually, just to get a really good explainer on what the applications are. And that was good. That was good. Yeah. All right, Rich, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is almost a duplicate of what I just heard. I have a front garden with a lot of bulbs in it. If I put down preen now, it's not going to affect the bulbs.
Correct. What you don't want to do is put down pre-emergent preen or any of the other ones that are available when the bulbs are emerging. If there's the corkscrew of the tulip or daffodils are coming out of the ground, you don't want to ever let a pre-emergent fall into that plant because it will harm that plant. So you probably have a good month to put out pre-emergent and not worry about bulbs. I've never heard of pre-emergent hurting crocus bulbs, which are the earliest bulbs. But
yeah, I don't.
It's tulips that I worry about the most.
Yeah, to your point though, I've got daffodils starting to come up.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I when the snow melted away, they're like an inch tall. you know, so they're starting to come.
I think you're okay.
So I better get busy.
Yeah, yeah. Take advantage of the weather.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Rich.
Thanks for your question, Rich, at 314-436-7900. Let's continue with the phone calls with AJ.
How's it going, gentlemen?
Morning, AJ.
AJ.
Question for you. When is the best time to put down crabgrass preventer, and should I core aerate before that?
Oh, the best time is up to interpretation, but some people are starting this week, and if you core aerate, my advice is to, if you core aerate in the spring, you have to let those holes close up. So I usually tell folks to core aerate and then either rake or drag the cores or wait for a good rain till the holes close up, and then you can apply your pre-emergent.
Okay.
If you're seeding in the spring, I generally recommend only shade lawns are the best to apply seed in the spring. I think you don't even have to worry about pre-emergence. If you have that much shade, you're not going to grow crabgrass. So if you are seeding in the full sun, you'd want to do that maybe in the next 3 weeks or so, because you really limit your pre-emergent application until your new seed is up in mode twice, and that's usually about 6 weeks. So you'd want to use a product called Dithiapure Dimension after that, because that's a pre- and a post-emergent for crabgrass. And just have to read the label and make sure you got the right concentration.
All right. And one other question. In our landscaping around our house, it's already all established. We have all kind of bushes and plants and stuff like that. It's starting to get, it almost looks like a little bit of clover growing in it. And it seems like every year, usually we just pull it out, but it seems like every year it's coming back more and more. And is there something I can actually spray on that won't damage any of the landscape plants?
Probably not, AJ. You know, you need to, you're going to need to be careful with spraying, that you don't spray the desirable plants.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. Is this little weed that looks like clover, is it real woody, or is it like clover?
It actually looks like clover. It's just a real small, it's kind of a lime green color. It's real small compared to what normal clover is.
Yeah.
If you see it now, I doubt if it's clover. It could be, but it's maybe chickweed or henbit more so than anything. But
Are you seeing it now, or is this just later in the year?
We had some leftover from last year that I didn't pull, and it's still there. It's still green, but I'm sure it's going to start coming back once everything starts growing again. Yeah. It seems like I'm pulling a lot more of it every year.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you to, like a first set, AJ, you know, you need to probably, you're right, treat it, but you're just going to have to be real careful with how you spray, that you don't spray the shrubs or the perennials, you know, that are in there.
Yeah, pick a non-windy day, and the ready-to-use products that are in like Windex-like bottles, you can hold those real close to the weed and just spray the surface of the weeds, and probably not spray enough herbicide to harm any of your desirable bushes. That product doesn't move through the ground and into the roots. It's absorbed by the leaf on the surface.
What would be a good
soil.
One to use on that? I don't want to really use Roundup, but
if you don't want to use that, use a selective herbicide, like anything with some 2,4-D would kill clover real easily.
Okay.
Weed Be Gone, real popular item. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, AJ. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. You're tuned into the Garden Hotline on KMOX, and our guest today answering your questions, Jeff Kendall from the Horstman Brothers, and Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson. The number to call in and ask your question on this February 1st is 314-436-7900. Linda, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. I need to put down a crabgrass preventer, but I also need a weed and feed. So I was wondering how that should be spaced out.
Yeah. So Linda, the problem with granular weed and feeds is it will only control the weeds you are looking at that day. It has nothing to do with the future. So if I sound like I'm not a weed and feed proponent, it's because I'm not. It gives people false hope that they're using a weed and feed to control, like clover, like the previous caller, And it will kill that clover today, but it won't kill the clover that's going to germinate in 60 days or other broadleaf weeds that are coming. So my advice to homeowners who are doing it themselves is to put out a pre-emergent after they've mowed their lawns once or twice and made sure all the winter clutter is cleaned up. And then if you have broadleaf weeds, you should either be willing to pay somebody to spray if you don't want to use chemicals yourself, or if you use a weed and feed, just know that it has nothing to do with next month or even next week. And so as long as you know what you're getting yourself into, you can use those products, but I have low regard for them because of their effectiveness, their cost, and just the, you know, to put a weed and feed everywhere environmentally just doesn't make any sense to me. I'd rather see you spot spray weeds and you'll have better control and use less chemicals in the environment.
Well, do you think a hardware store or a big box store could advise me on what is a pre-emergent? Because I don't see anything on the bag that says pre-emergent.
Yeah, I think if you go to places like Schnars or people like that that are a lot more friendly and knowledgeable than the box stores, you'll get good advice to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, Linda, I think, sorry, it's Jeff, but I just was going to say, I think on the pre-emergent, you know, the crabgrass preventer, most do-it-yourself products, I will actually say, you know, crabgrass preventer is what they usually will have on the bag, you know, so that's pretty easy. And like Glenn was saying, I think that's the best thing to do is get that pre-emergent down in a timely fashion, like he said, and then you want to start spot spraying, you know, broadleaf weeds as needed, you know, and hopefully you don't need a whole lot of weed killer, you know, but that's the best way to deal with it.
Keep mowing it high.
Okay, well then, does the crabgrass preventer go down first?
Yeah, so generally, you know, the two are kind of unrelated. I mean, the spot spraying is going to physically kill weeds that are already up. The crabgrass preventer really only works on grassy annual weeds like crabgrass, and it will prevent those from coming up. Once they're up, it doesn't do anything to them, really.
Yeah. Right.
So yes, go ahead and get the crabgrass preventer down early, you know, and then be prepared to spray the broadleaf weeds as needed. And, you know, be prepared to give the lawn another dose of fertilizer before it gets too hot in the late spring or, you know, mid-spring. Give it another dose of fertilizer, and then you'll probably be in fairly good shape.
Yeah,
I can do that.
There you go.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call, Linda. Good questions there. We've gotten some good questions so far on the program. And let's go next to Michelle. You are on the Garden Hotline with Jeff and Glenn.
Well, good morning. I have a question. I have a Mike Miller design yard. And in one area, which is kind of a big area, we put spreading liriope. I wanted that area that I didn't have to take care of. Okay, so we're talking maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago when this was designed. And his suggestion was at the end of summer just to mow it. That's all you had to do one time, which is great. But my question is, if I didn't do that, is there a max height that liriope does grow, or will it just keep growing and growing and growing taller? So my question is, how tall does the spreading liriope get?
Yeah, so the spicata type is the more spreading type of liriope.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that, you know, that might get 6 inches tall, you know, or maybe a little taller than that, actually, you know.
Okay, so that is the max.
Yeah, it doesn't get really. Okay. Yeah, it's not a tall growing plant.
I have that in my backyard, and it's between 6 and 10 inches tall at some corners.
Oh, really?
Sure.
That tall.
Yeah.
Well, I just didn't want it to get like as high as a bush or something like this. You know, even 10 inches is fine, but. Yeah. I didn't want to try it and it got out of hand because it's very, very nice and it's almost spread to the point
of where I needed it to go. So, all right. Well, I appreciate the help.
It reminds me of Bermuda grass. You got to make sure you want that because if you plant it, it'll march wherever it wants to go.
Yeah. It will go. I know about that, too. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling in, Michelle. Again, the number is 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Jeff and Glenn here answering your questions. And tomorrow is Groundhog Day. The forecast for tomorrow morning in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, is cloudy and chilly with temperatures in the low 20s. He makes his prediction around 7:08 Eastern Time. And if it's that cloudy, it could be unlikely that he will see his shadow, which means it's time for spring. If he sees his shadow, it's time for winter. However, the historical data is not in the favor of spring. Phil has seen his shadow, meaning more winter, 107 times, no shadow, only 21 times. Wow. So the odds are highly in favor of more winter. Last year did not fall in the norm. He did not see his shadow. So according to Phil, we were going to go straight into spring or quickly into spring. Now, the other thing is the NOAA, National Oceanographic Atmospheric Association, says Punxsutawney Phil has no predictive skill whatsoever. So even the organizers of the annual Groundhog Day event in Western Pennsylvania say that turning to a large rodent for weather forecasting is mostly just a way to break up the winter monotony.
But it's a good excuse for a party, though, Scott.
Well, that's exactly right. His accuracy is just 35% from 2005 until now. And then, but let's just wrap this up with last year's declaration of an early spring actually was pretty accurate. Much of the country saw average or above average temperatures in February and March. Of course, that could be related to something else. Just wanted to give you some context for Groundhog Day tomorrow.
If he was a ball player and hit one out of three, he'd make millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true. 35%, that's right.
He'd be signed up.
Okay, we are going to get back to the phones here in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, but if you just called in, stay patient. We will get to your calls right after this. It's 314-436-7900. Glenn and Jeff will continue answering your questions in just a couple of minutes. It is the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by Jeff and Glenn. Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers, Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson, answering your questions on the hotline. It's 314-436-7900. Up next, let's go to Katie. Good morning.
Good morning. I seem to have this, I don't know if it's grass or a weed, but every 3 years I have to dig out my bulbs because this, whatever it is, it grows underneath of the ground and it just shoots up through there and it's got like white roots and it just never ends. It just, you keep pulling it and it just keeps streaming along.
Katie, you might be describing Bermuda grass. Yeah, does it wake up at the end of April to early May usually?
Is there anything because I try and keep like 1 foot in like of just ground before my mulch starts to prevent it from going in there, but that doesn't even stop it. How is there anything I can do to prevent that?
You know, Katie, just a thought, you know, if, like Glenn was saying, that was my thought as well. It's probably Bermuda grass. And, you know, before we can say definitively, we need to really know what it is. But if that's Bermuda grass, what you could do is let those bulbs bloom in the spring and let them, you know, go totally dormant. Let the leaves all turn brown, clean off the dead foliage. Then, you know, there's nothing on the bulb that's above ground. Then you could start spraying that Bermuda with a non-selective, you know, post-emergent, you know, Roundup type thing. Or a selective like Pilex, you know, would work as well, you know. So,
And that would not affect the bulb because
it shouldn't. As long as, like I said, you wait till those spring bulbs are totally done. You know, like the foliage is all done photosynthesizing and it's turned brown, and you can just clean it, rake it off, or pull it off, and then the you know, the bulbs down under the ground. So then you would be safe to spray the Bermuda grass.
And it's not one application. It's an application every 2 to 3 weeks for at least 3 applications. And if you use something like Roundup, you can also add a selective herbicide called triclopyr or Teflon ester, and that goes a long way in helping to kill that Bermuda selective.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much work every year to dig up all of the bulbs and then try and clean it out. Because this is what I've done for the last several years, is I just dig them up every other year and just try and pull out as much as I can.
Yeah. When people ask me how to get rid of Bermuda, I jokingly tell them the best thing to do is just move.
Oh, gosh.
It's a brutal weed.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your help, and have a great day.
Good night, Katie.
Thanks for calling in. We are not in the business of promoting real estate here, Glenn. But anyway, Fred, you're up next. Good morning.
Well, thank you. My question is about growing tomatoes. When you get really large tomatoes, is there something you can do to prevent the outer skin from cracking and getting deep cracks and not looking so pretty as far as tomatoes go? Actually very good eatable tomatoes, but they don't have a very appropriate appearance.
You know, I'm not an expert, Fred, but I've actually, you know, grown tomatoes over the years. You know, a couple things with tomatoes, I do know that their consistent watering is very key. You know, if you water them all the time, they tend to get very big quick, and then they, you know, tend, as you said, to split up. You know, same thing if you let them get big and then dry out, obviously, then they want to contract, and that's not good for it either. So consistent watering, maybe some mulch on the soil surface. You know, a mulch, when we say mulch with a tomato, it can be straw or something like that. It doesn't have to be like bark mulch. A compost, you know, just something to help regulate the moisture control might be all it really takes. I've probably balanced nutrients are a key as well.
I have a friend who grows them, and he's big on a shade screen over the top of the plants. He seems to talk about how he has less burn spots on the surface of the tomatoes by giving them a shade in starting in July usually.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Thanks for calling in, Fred. Up next, let's go to Kathy. Good morning, Kathy. You're on with Jeff and Glenn.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Kathy.
A previous caller mentioned mowing her liriope after the growing season, and I've always cut mine by hand, and now I'm wondering, am I just creating more work? Do I even need to cut the liriope before the next growing season?
Kathy, the real issue with that is usually, you know, where we live in the Midwest, usually the liriope gets winter damage and, you know, coming out of the winter, like in February or early March, a lot of it may actually be brown. So, you know, by cutting it like in early spring, you know, you cut it off and then it comes up from the bottom nice and clean. You know, that's probably, I think, the easiest way to deal with it. And then if it's a big enough area and it's fairly flat and level, you know, mowing on a high setting is an easy, quick way to deal with that.
A good idea.
Yeah. And then it's a nice cut compared to like, you know, weed eater or something, you know, it gets kind of jagged, you know, tears it up a little bit. So, you know, that's a good way to go if you can do it.
If you use a bagger, you suck up all the leaves that accumulated over the winter, too, and it just makes that liriope wake up a little quickly in the spring.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I learned something new. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy. That's the whole point of the show. Learn something new every time. And next, we're going to go to Joan. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes. Good morning.
I like ivy, and I have ivy all around my house, and it's, you know, it doesn't get into the grass. I have it bordered and everything. And in the backyard, I had a big maple tree, and I had ivy all around it, and it didn't get into the grass. I had bricks all around it. Well, I had to have the tree taken out, and I had it taken out, and the ivy all died. By spring, it was all dead. And I thought, well, that's the end of that. And all these stems, you know, because the ivy's really old. It's been there years. But it started coming back. It all came back, but it all came back with weeds. And there's weeds all through this ivy. And I don't have any weeds in any of the other ivy. And I don't know why it came up, unless because of the tree coming out. But how do I kill the weeds without killing the ivy?
Hey, Joan, you're I don't know how big the area is, but probably physically.
It's about 7 by 8, something like that.
Yeah, if it's 7 by 8 foot, just hand weeding is going to be your best.
Yeah. Tried that. Oh, my God.
Well, so that's a problem, though. When weeds are in the ivy, if it's a grassy weed, there's some designer products we can use. What is that? Ornamec. That'll work on grassy weeds, but if you got like broadleaf weeds in ivy, that's going to be pretty tough chemical scenario.
The grassy weed chemical is called Ornamec.
Ornamec,
Ornamec.
Ornamec.
But that's, you know, when I hear stories like that, it's proof of why we don't mow our grass short. People that mow their grass short have weeds because you're eliminating the competition. When your ivy died off, those weed seeds were always there, and they're everywhere in the yard. But when the ivy isn't there as competition to grab the light and the water, the weed seeds take advantage and grow. And weeds are opportunistic, and they want us to have no competition for them to succeed. So it's a good lesson to learn about why we don't mow our cool season grasses short, especially after April 1st. So thanks.
Well, it's always been ivy there. It's never been any grass.
Yeah. Well, the weed seeds blow because that's how weed seeds move around. And
well, and they like the sun. That they, yeah, they like tree, the sun. The tree's gone. They got the sun. That's kind of what's going on there.
So maybe I should just take it all out and start all over.
Well, that's an option. That's an option also.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Good luck, Joan.
Thanks for calling in, Jim. We appreciate it. We will go next to Jim. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I got a question about, I've seen it on the internet. It seems like my phone's getting bombarded with it. You can throw down seed now and let it sit in the soil, and it'll come up on when the weather gets warm enough for it. But I wonder what the germination rate is for doing that. I mean, the price of seed today, you got to try to get every blade of grass you can get to grow. But I like your thoughts on that, doing that.
Yeah, we've had this call a couple of times, and it's really just a belief. I'm not a big believer in that, but we've had callers say that it worked great for them. So the beauty of horticulture is trial and error, and like we talked earlier, we're all learning on this together. So I'm a believer that if you create a hole in the ground or scratch the surface, put your seed down and then scratch it again and cover it with dirt, that's better than just laying it on top of the soil. So seed needs two things to germinate. It's soil temperature and moisture. It's not sunlight. So no farmer plants corn and steps back and says, man, look at all that corn out there. It's in the ground. So anything we can do to put the seed into the ground is a much, much better return on the investment of that seed than just laying it on top of the soil and hoping for the best. So depends on how big the area is, how much energy you have, but a simple scratching of the soil, seeding, and then spot seeding and then raking it again and covering it up is my go-to recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, thanks, Jim. Good question. 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline. Last chance coming next on KMOX. The last segment. Last chance to get your question in. We might have a couple spots available. 314-436-7900. Jeff and Glenn answering your questions. Let's go next to David. Good morning, David.
Morning. Yeah, I've got a grouping of crimson pygmy barberry that could be 30 years old, maybe 25 years old. You know, they look great, but they've really declined over the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. I prune them back a little bit every year just to keep them in shape and in check. But I'm wondering if I can, you know, really go after them and do a real rejuvenation job on them, if they'd come back or if they're just too old.
Hey, David, this is Jeff. I've actually got a very similar situation. I did this last spring, early spring. I cut mine actually down to the ground, you know, and they came back beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I left, and it had thick trunk, you know, and of course the barberries have yellow wood, you know, when you cut them back.
Yes,
I
know that.
Yeah. So there was like a big, on the one, I'm not joking, it was probably a 2-inch diameter, you know, stump, yellow, and that thing came back nice, and I didn't have to trim it the rest of the year. So I would say that.
Well, I'll give it a try, because...
Back from what I remember in school.
I'll do that. I'll try that out. Thank you.
Yeah, rejuvenation pruning. You'd go in with a spade around the edges of the roots and cut off some of the feeder roots and make them regenerate some new feeder roots too.
Yeah.
Good question, David. Up next, we have Brad. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a weed control question. We're having a hard time controlling weeds. We've got a long gravel driveway on some property that leads to a pond that's stocked with fish. So we're hesitant to use Roundup, something like that. We've used the mixture of salt water, dishwashing liquid, and that just doesn't seem to be doing it. Do you have any, should we be cautious about using Roundup or another weed control, or what are your suggestions for? It's got a good stand of thick gravel on the road, but the weeds still seem to come up.
Yeah, there's pre-emergence that would go through that gravel, and the label will tell you when it comes to water to be cautious of maybe like a 10 or 15 foot buffer. And if it were me and my water, I'd probably be closer to a 20 to 25 foot buffer just to be safe. And so there's soil sterilants and pre-emergence that would keep that gravel clean. And you just have to be careful with that and read the label carefully. But Roundup, when it's applied properly and you follow the rules, it only will kill what it lands on today. It has no soil movement. And so if you pick a non-windy day, you read the label, and you take the precautions that it recommends, you can kill what's there, and you can actually add liquid pre-emergence to those areas that will – the Roundup will kill what's there, and then the pre-emergence, in theory, will stop some more weed control. What happens in gravel, in my experience, is when you drive on it, you break the barrier. And so that's why weeds reappear in gravel areas. They get driven on, but there's soil sterilants like Pramitol that will do a good job of keeping weeds from regrowing. If you read the label, you can apply once in the spring and not have anything regrow all summer.
And is that something you can get at a Home Depot, or is that a specialty item?
It's probably more of a specialty item. I'm reluctant to tell you where you can get it. Do some research, or you can call me off the air, and I'd be glad to talk to you about some options.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right, David.
Thank you, Brad, for the phone call. Joyce, you're up next. Good morning.
I was gifted quite a few spring bulbs and unable to plant them last fall. Is it too late to plant them now, or plant them in a container, or how can I keep them till next fall?
Hey, Joyce, that's a great question. I don't think I know you're not alone this year on that. I think, you know, I don't think it is too late. You know, we're going to have ups and downs, and the soil's still relatively cool, or, you know, so I had a thought on this earlier this morning. I thought this question would come up, but I think it might be smart or good. Go ahead and put them in the freezer for a week, you know, and let them get really good and cold, and then plant them. Make sure you don't plant them too too deep either, you know, because if they're too deep, you know, they may not wake up as fast, you know. So but I would think, you know, put them in the freezer, plant them next week, you know, give them a week in the freezer. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay. What about in a container?
Same thing, you know. Like if you force bulbs, they have to put them through a cold storage situation where they stay cool in a freezer or in a fridge, you know, for a while, and then they plant them in the pots, you know, and then they grow. So
okay, so that's all I would have to do.
Put
them in the freezer.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Joyce. And that is going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline. Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson and Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers, thanks so much, guys, for coming back in and answering questions and providing some information to the listeners. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, thanks, Scott. We're glad to help and appreciate it.
Mm. I give a shout-out to my buddy John. He's got a daughter having our son having a baby and a daughter getting married soon. I told him I would say hello and wish him well.
Well, you just did.
Yeah. Now they're famous. Their life won't be the same.
It won't be the same. That's right.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. We'll talk to you soon.